This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
When you're picking this low in the draft, you got to do a great job on the horizontal board, meaning you can't get married to a position because you don't know what position's going to be there. So you've got to be able to make the judgment on, say you want to pick a running back, or say you want to pick a tight end, or say you want to pick a receiver. How that receiver, tight end, or running back relates to the corner or the safety on the same horizontal position of the board. And who's the better player? Don't ever tell me they're the same. We dated them the same. They're the same player. They're never the same.
You're listening to Rick Camp on 670 The Score, Chicago's sports station.
Welcome into Hour 2. I am Rick Camp with you until 9 o'clock. That's when Hit and Run starts with Matt Spiegel. He's going to have Lynn Bramer starting at 10 o'clock with him. Lynn Bramer's one of the people, along with Les, that I'm pretty much assume has never, ever slept and can just exist. So make sure to tune into that. Plenty of baseball talk leading up to 12:45. Cubs pregame, Diamondbacks at Cubs. But we're going over to the NFL draft to talk with The Score and Pro Football Weekly's Greg Gabriel. Follow him on Twitter at Greg Gabe. And if you have not yet, go get the Pro Football Weekly Draft Magazine. You can find it everywhere where you got magazines. So just go get that. I love always still having just like a tangible something to hold on to magazine, print stuff out, because maybe I'm just old that way. I don't know. Greg, I appreciate you taking time out for me this morning.
How you doing today, Rick?
I'm doing well. I appreciate you taking time out on an Easter morning. So I guess where I want to start with you is there's plenty of Bears stuff to get to. What came out on Friday about the Raiders with John Gruden and Mike Mayock sending home all the scouts, is that as big of a deal as maybe the initial shock seemed?
You know, not really. And do I like it from a scouting standpoint? No. And only because, you know, the draft weekend is like Christmas weekend for scouts in that the culmination of all the work they've done the previous 12 months comes to fruition that day or that weekend. And they should be part of that celebration, so to speak, as their team tries to get better with getting some new players. At the same time, you've got a situation where you have a new general manager came in midstream and probably more than likely all, if not most, of the scouting staff with the Raiders is going to be gone after the draft. And I think it got to a situation where the scouts knew that, front office knows that, and they, being that they have three picks in the first round, they didn't want any leaks of their board getting out or what direction they were thinking as far as talks and strategy planning leading up to the draft went. And so they, rather than have them in the room, they got all the information that these guys had in the pre-draft meeting process. Now the board's going to be set by just Gruden and Mayock themselves. And they're probably doing that right now as we speak. And then, have it ready for the draft Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
I know it came out that they're planning on having, I believe it was five in their draft room, at least from when we see the look-ins on, you know, on ESPN and NFL Network. It seems like there's always give or take 10 to 12 people in that room. Once their own staff is set, in theory, would the scouts that would maybe be called in to, you know, make their case again for their guy, would they be essentially somewhere else within the building and called in, or sometimes those scouts in the room as well?
Well, except for one draft that I've been involved in, and that was in Philly, and they have a smaller draft room, and that was, I think, the 2013 draft. There was only a handful of people in the draft room itself, and that was the head coach, the owner, the general manager, and the personnel director, scouting director, and then the people who work the phones. You have to have somebody in the room that is taking trade calls and at least writing down that information, and then the general manager or coach can make a decision as to if they, in fact, want to make a trade. And often that gets, you know, you're getting a lot of calls almost at once, and so somebody has to have that particular job. And also, if there's a trade for a veteran, you want your cap guy around in case there's salary cap implications involved. But in Philly, the scouts were in a room right next to the draft room. So if they had a question in the minutes leading up to when you were on the clock, they'd bring a guy in, say, okay, let's go over this about this player again, and so on, and then you'd give your spiel. But other than that, like when I was in New York and the whole time with Chicago, all the scouts were in the draft room, and we had open discussion about every player we took.
You can follow Greg on Twitter at Greg Gabe, and going to be busy during all of our draft coverage. So Thursday for the first round, even though the Bears are not involved, 6 to 10, it's going to be Greg along with Hub, Dan Pompey, and Patrick Manley. And you're going to be able to hear Greg from 3 to 6:35 with Julie and Maggie on Saturday, which is when the Bears are going to have a bulk of their action in rounds 4 through 7. I still have to get used to the three-day format, that it's 1, 2, and 3, and then 4 through 7. I don't know. For you, which way do you like it better, the old two-day weekend binge, or do you like it spread out a little bit?
Well, you know, Rick, to tell you the truth, when I started scouting in 1981 in those first few drafts, draft was on a Tuesday, and it was 12 rounds, and all 12 rounds were in one day. We'd start at like 8 o'clock in the morning Eastern time, and then you finish up about 3 the next morning. It was a long day. And you get done with the draft, and then you got to get into, you know, free agency with the guys that got undrafted. And it was kind of crazy, and you know, a lot of coffee and caffeine going into your veins then, because it was just a long, long day. A few years later, they went to the Friday and Saturday. I like the three-day format in that, okay, at the end of the first round, you don't reset your board, but you get to look at, you know, prioritize guys, and you have all day on Friday to look at the board, prioritize. Maybe you're going to change your priorities a little bit based on what players have already come off the board. And you get to do the same thing again Saturday morning because the draft doesn't start until 11 o'clock Chicago time. So, again, you have a few hours to sit and look and make a plan for those rounds. Now, granted, during the week and the weeks leading up to the draft, you've created a strategy. And in the Bears' case, I would think because they're not even going to be picked until the third round, they've already prioritized players that they hope are there, but they have no assurance that those guys will be there at number 87. So even though that's where they're starting to pick, probably at the end of the second round, they're going to start getting serious about, okay, look, at some of these guys are already starting to drop. Maybe there's a chance that they could be there, you know, 25 picks later, and so you might bring over a few more players that you didn't think were going to be into the equation, actually start talking about them, and you're going to have, you know, quite a bit of time to talk about them some more. You have talked about them in the meetings, but as far as being serious contenders for the number 87 pick for the Bears.
Is there a position group that jives with the Bears' needs that seems like there could be that player of value that just kind of falls to the either not maybe not necessarily falls to them, but just gets to them that would be the like the ideal situation?
Well, talking to people around the league that keep track of these things, and it's like private workouts, visits, etc. The position that the Bears have concentrated on most, there's three positions over the course of the last couple months, has been running back, tight end, and corner. So you would think, based on that, that first pick in the third round and probably their next pick in the fourth round will come from one of those three position groups. But at the same time, like I was saying a few minutes ago, you don't know who you have rated a little bit higher. Let's say there's a player in the bottom of the second round that you have rated on your board as a bottom of the second round player, and you had no idea that that player was going to be there at number 87, and all of a sudden you're getting to, say, 70, and he's there. you got to bring him into the equation and talk about him, because he could very well be there 15, 16 picks later. And that's just all about the preparation and making sure that you're up to speed on all the players. You don't want to pass a good player because you didn't have conversation about them. And no two boards are alike. That's a lock in the league. You know, there's 32 teams, and I guarantee you how the players are lined up on those 32 boards are completely different from one another.
And I guess along with that, bringing up, you know, you see a guy at 70, Ryan Pace is kind of shown to have the itchy trigger finger a little bit in that regard. But I see that, you know, everything is talked about this in immediate window right now. But as you look down the road to when Trubisky's going to be under, ideally for the Bears, under a big contract because he's played so well, don't you need to kind of preserve some of those picks for these future years just so you have some cheap, hopefully, you know, good, solid talent to put around him?
You hit the nail right on the head. I obviously, he could make a trade in this draft. I would think it's going to be more down than up because of that. Next, you're looking at this year, the first pick is in the bottom of the third round. Then you look at next year, no first round pick, no third round pick. You have 2 seconds. Hopefully the first second is a pretty good second round pick, but you don't have a lot of capital to use as trade bait as far as moving up. And you need those rookie salaries, first year contracts for the salary cap to balance off the big contracts. And when you look at what the Bears have to do, it's not only Mitch Trubisky, it's going to be Eddie Jackson, got Cody White here, and there's going to be a few others that you're going to have to pay along the way. Leonard Floyd's going to be under the fifth-year option for this coming year, but after that, you're going to have to pay him. So you're going to need – you have to preserve those picks to have those lighter salaries. Otherwise, it could just screw up your whole salary cap situation because you don't have enough good young players coming into the system.
You talked about every board being different and just everything being in the eye of the beholder. It seems like more than ever this running back class is that way, because I'll look at – five different people, and normally it seems like most years maybe the top couple will be the same and then 3, 4, 5 or so will be a little different. It seems like this running back class is all over the place. Who do you like, and then who do you like that seems to fit the Bears around the third, fourth round?
Well, first of all, it wouldn't shock me if no running back goes in the first round at all, and the max would be probably 2, and I doubt that's going to happen. And I think for the most part, most people have the first two backs, and it could be a different order. Miles Sanders from Penn State, Josh Jacobs from Alabama. Some people might have Jacobs first. Some people might have Sanders first. Could either one of those guys go in the bottom part of the first? Yeah, they could, but it's probably more than likely that they go in the second round. And as far as fits for what the Bears want, both of those guys are fits, but no way either one of those guys gets anywhere close to the third round. So you'd have to make a trade to get a chance to draft one of those. After that, David Montgomery from Iowa State, Daryl Henderson from Memphis, Travion Williams from Texas A&M, Divine Ozigbo from Nebraska, Alexander Madison from Boise, Devin Singletary from Florida Atlantic. Those are the guys that are probably the best suited to play in the Bears offense, in that they can run inside and outside. They've got some potential to pass block, and they're very good receivers coming out of the backfield.
And you mentioned tight end as well. Are the Bears looking for, would you assume they're looking for more of a balanced guy in a perfect world, or are they looking for maybe a more of a pure blocker, more of a guy that could also, you know, not necessarily take Trey Burton's spot by any stretch of the imagination, but be more of another receiver to give Matt Nagy another threat and just another weapon to plug in?
Yeah, I think in that situation, it's the best player at the position. They have a guy that they think can be a good blocker in Adam Shaheen. We just haven't seen it all because, you know, he got hurt at the end of training camp last year, had surgery on his foot, missed the first half of the season. And I don't think he was ever 100% when he came in at the back half of the season. Trey Burton is strictly a move guy. When you have him lined up as the Y tight end, he's more of a liability than a strength, and a lot of that has to do with his size. Yes, he can block, but does he block the way that you want a Y tight end to block? They would think with his size and strength, Shaheen can do that. Coming from Division II, it was going to take him some time, but I think we've seen flashes that he can be a pretty good blocker. So now it's, okay, what's going to be the best bet for the offense? I think what they want out of the position is just more production overall. When you look at two teams that play basically the same offense, and that's Philly and Kansas City, their leading tight end receivers both had over 100 catches last year. So, and Trey Burton was one in the 50s. So you have to get more production now. Are you going to get that out of a third or fourth round pick? Not necessarily, but even to spread the ball around, you want to get a guy that's probably the more well-rounded tight end who can play inside if he has to, or can, is athletic enough to play outside and still is a good receiver and a good route runner.
Greg, I really appreciate your time this morning. Looking forward to seeing you throughout all the draft coverage. I know from getting to produce a couple of those, it's always fun off the air as well as on the air, but always great information. So I appreciate your time this morning.
Well, thanks for having me, Rick. Appreciate it. See you during the week.
That is Greg Gabriel. Follow him on Twitter at Greg Gabe. And once again, our draft coverage this week for the first round on Thursday night, 6 to 10, it'll be Greg Gabriel along with Hub, Dan Pompey, and Patrick Manley. 10 to midnight will be Julie DeCaro with Arthur Arkish. Friday from 6 to 8.05 leading into Cubs Pre, it'll be Joe Ostrowski. And Saturday from 10 to 3 from Soldier Field, it'll be Joniak Thayer, Hub, Dan Pompey, and David Haw. And then from 3 to 6.35, it'll be the Julie and Maggie Show with Greg Gabriel there providing analysis on the day that the Bears are going to be making most of their picks. So that's a good primer. I feel like I'm getting into that mood. I'm ready for draft, ready for a little bit of football to mix in with the baseball and basketball. And we're going to talk about the first round of the NBA playoffs next with Dan Favale. You read him in Bleacher Report, NBA Math, Hardwood Knocks podcast, real good basketball mind that you should be following on Twitter at Dan Favale. And we'll talk to him next. I'm Rick Camp with you until 9 o'clock on The Score.
Good feed to Allen. Hit high that time by Embiid and crashing again to the floor. My goodness. Dudley and Simmons into the stands.
We wanted to get this one and go home and try to finish it. So feels great to be up 3-1. So we definitely don't want to be in a situation like the Warriors 2 years ago.
I was kidding, man.
I tried to
I love Joel Embiid. He's just fun. Welcome back. I'm Rick Camp with you until the top of the hour. That's when Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel's on until 12:45 at 10 o'clock. Lynn Bramer from WXRT will be in studio with Spiegs. Lynn's obviously a huge baseball fan, big Cubs fan, so that'll be must-listen radio. We're going to go out to the hotline right now and welcome in Dan Favale on Twitter at Favale. I just said it to myself five times in the break so that I wouldn't do it on the air. Alas, I'm still me. But either way, Dan's work is fantastic for Bleacher Report, NBA Math, and the Hardwood Knocks podcast. Dan, thank you for taking time for me this morning.
Oh, no problem. Thank you for having me.
So which series has been the most fun for you so far?
I definitely think Brooklyn and Philadelphia, despite it being 3-1, it's the type of series that you could kind of wish would go 7 because you're seeing those old-fashioned dust-ups. We saw that mini brawl in Game 4 that got Jared Dudley and Jimmy Butler ejected, the back-and-forth between Jared Dudley and Simmons. Caris LeVert really once again emerging as Brooklyn's best player now that he's healthy. Just the storylines with Joel Embiid's injury and him playing through it in Game 4, and he looked so gassed, and he wasn't great down the stretch but had a monster game overall. That, you know, even if that ends up being the gentleman's sweep, this is a series that's going to be, it was much closer, much more competitive, much more engaging than that 4-1 perspective score would suggest.
And maybe this is just an idealistic view of things, but I would love for Brooklyn's showing to make a difference in terms of free agency. Of, you know, like, is there a way for us to kind of like whatever plane Kevin Durant's going to be on, just kind of, you know, let him get into New York and then just kind of take the car and steer him towards Barclays instead of MSG because, God, that would be a lot of fun to just add Kevin Durant to that mix of Nets players and maybe just my idealized version of the NBA, and that would just be fantastic.
Yeah, it absolutely would. And I think what's going to be big for them is that people around the league, including players and agents, have taken notice of how they take care of guys. They were at a point these past few years where there was a lot of turnover. So it's not just these resurrection projects that we've seen that are going to help sell them, but they've signed guys to rest of the season deals just sort of as like this good gesture to agents and them being in their system for a while, even though they weren't permanent pieces. I do think that could resonate. And again, if they come back and, you know, they seem like a pretty resilient team and they win game five, and that's something that you can use as a pitch to where the team just kept fighting, and you have a bunch of, yeah, there's higher end guys like D'Angelo Russell, like Caris LeVert, but they're a lot of complementary pieces there. So a star could come right in and make them a big-time player in the East. What's probably more important for them than actually landing a star this summer is getting meetings with them. You know, will, aside from Kevin Durant, you know, can they get FaceTime with Jimmy Butler? Can they get FaceTime with Kawhi Leonard? And, you know, if you go back to those wings, whether it's Butler, Leonard, or Kevin Durant, I think you can really make a case that Brooklyn has one of the two or three best basketball fits for guys like that. And so I do think it's going to be interesting just to see who they get FaceTime with over the offseason.
Talking NBA playoffs with Dan Favalli. Follow him on Twitter at Dan Favalli. And Bleacher Report, NBA Math, Hardwood Knox podcast. You mentioned Jared Dudley. Is he the hero that we need, or is he just the hero that we get?
Can he be both? It's just, you know, he's had some good moments in this series, hit some big threes. His defense has been pretty good at points. The most valuable thing he might have done, even though they lost, is getting Jimmy Butler tossed. In that game, you know, starting the brawl that gets Jimmy Butler involved and gets him ejected. So that he comes out and calls out Ben Simmons, I appreciate the rivalries where one of the players is just so inferior to the other, knows it, and just doesn't care because he knows he's not on Ben Simmons' level, and yet he's taunting him in the middle of the game. I'm absolutely here for it. And so he is both the hero we need, but also on a level of when you're looking at impact players, it is sort of a degree of, well, this is what we're getting. But to me, that's absolutely fine.
Yeah, and especially since, like, normally the guys that fit that role, like your Mario Chalmerses of the world, are just, like, really, like, not the smartest players in the world, but Jared Dudley actually is. Okay, let's bring it down a little bit. I guess I have to mention the Bulls at some point, so we might as well do it right here. How far away are they truly since they talk about with their 20-ish million in cap space, getting a couple solid vets, and Jim Boylan's back. They had to make sure that they locked in maybe the worst coach in the league to this point. So I guess, do you have any faith in progression from the guys that are on the roster and maybe that they can fit at least what it seems like the ownership's goal is next year, which is just get into the playoffs and get some extra revenue?
Yeah, if playoffs are the goal, I think there's going to be a real issue there. It does seem like the locker room kind of did a 180 on Boylan, where, you know, guys like Zach LaVine almost appreciated him by the end of the season. That's something we'll have to monitor, though, because it doesn't sound like they had an extensive search before they extended him. And to have that happen is just sort of bizarre. They do have a nice foundation in place, though. I know they need a point guard, but Otto Porter's still pretty young. And he was very good for them. I'm very intrigued to see what it's like. We didn't get to see it after the trade deadline, but having Wendell Carter Jr. and Lauri Markkanen, I'm almost at the point where a lot of people are still high on Wendell Carter Jr., rightfully so, but Markkanen seems to just kind of fall by the wayside a little bit, and he's going to be really good. He showed some more stuff off the bounce this season. If he's going to generate more free throws in addition to being a good shooter, and he's a better defensive rebounder than I think he gets credit for. They have good pieces in place. I don't want to see them try and expedite this process. They might have a good pick, or they should have a good pick this year. Maybe it turns into, ideally it turns into Zion, but if it turns into a Ja Morant, maybe a Darius Garland. I also think Jared Culver or Cam Reddish looks good in Chicago. I think if they follow a more gradual route and don't try and go out and just spend all this cap space on one guy, it's fine to divvy it up because they can get to 20-plus million fairly easily, as you said, even after taking Otto Porter's contract. If you want to divvy that up among some veterans, maybe on a couple nice value multi-year deals or maybe just on these one-year packs, that's fine. But I don't want to see them consolidate that money into one guy because they're more than one guy away from the playoffs, even in the Eastern Conference.
So the Rockets win despite James Harden starting 0-for-15 from the field, and it really just looks like it's – I wonder if it's almost better that the Rockets would play the Warriors in the second round as opposed to conference finals, but seeing how they've looked lately, how much of a chance do you give the Rockets against the Warriors?
This is like a need the receipts type of situation, because I destroyed the Rockets over the offseason for letting Ariza, Bamute go, for being so concerned with the tax. And they come out of the All-Star break, have the second-best defense from then on to the end of the regular season. They're getting really good minutes from Daniels in the playoffs. Eric Gordon's offense has come around. James Harden has been close to average defensively this season. I think people probably overstated him there, but he's been close to average in his role, which is big for them. And I give them probably close to an equal chance of winning against the Warriors this year as last year. I know some people have argued that they might be better overall. Perhaps that's true. Their defensive scheme, it's a little bit more disciplined where they're not switching as much, which is good. That's not really going to help you as much against the Warriors. So I don't think that this team matches up as well. But if there's going to be a squad in the West that comes out against them, against the Warriors and wins, to me it is Houston at this point, and it's not even close. And your point about playing them in the second round is something that I fully buy into, because James Harden looks gassed at points with the workload he's shouldered. So you just want to get the hardest series out of the way as quick as possible. But also it just, in theory, decreases the likelihood that you have to deal with Chris Paul maybe getting injured. And if you're going to have to go through the Warriors anyway, just it doesn't really matter when you have to go through them. So I'm with you that I think facing them earlier arguably makes the Rockets even more dangerous in this situation.
When the Warriors get to that series, where's the loss of Cousins going to hurt them the most? Because when I watch them, I don't think it's as much with the starters as much as it is the role that he played with the primary, well, he's a primary guy on the second unit.
Yeah, this is such a tricky situation, because I don't want to diminish Cousins' ability, but I don't think not having him impacts the Warriors at all. I might not go as far as to say it makes them better, because depth really isn't their strong suit right now. And as you sort of alluded to, having him to anchor those second units, there could be situations where if teams are looking to bog down the pace and really force the Warriors to go through these half-court slogs, that he wins you a game or two. That being said, it's almost more important to have him if you ended up playing a Utah, or if you ended up playing a Denver where Nikola Jokic is there and is really going to probe and manipulate you in the half court. And even then, just Kevon Looney has looked like he's been ready for a larger role for quite some time. He's a better defender in space on defense. His offense just fits with the Warriors a little bit better too, because you don't have to allocate any touches to him. He'll roll to the rim. He'll just stand out there and set screens. So I don't think it's going to be an issue missing Cousins. If you lose a player, or if there's a scorer like Klay Thompson going through a slump, then yes, I do think there's a certain issue there. But particularly with Draymond Green not shooting the three ball well, it's more valuable to have minutes with him at the center then, because it's easier to navigate when your five isn't a strong three-point shooter. So I think they're going to be just fine, and there's a chance, and I hate saying this, but there's a chance that they end up humming even more smoothly without him.
Speaking with Dan Favalli, follow him on Twitter at Dan Favalli, writing for Bleacher Report and NBA Math. This Blazers-Thunder series, which we get game four of today, is my favorite series by a mile. And maybe it's just, you know, it's you're not going out on much of a limb if you're someone like me saying, boy, I really think Dame is damn good when he was first-team NBA last year and is probably going to end up second-team NBA this year. But it just feels like this was the year, and if there was ever a year not to have this Nurkic injury happen, especially when it did, this is the one, because it really feels like if he was healthy on the weaker side of that bracket, they could get, at least get to the conference finals.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, they might even still get there, just because you look at them, their personnel still sort of plays into the bracket, as you mentioned, because you're going to lean on Enes Kanter. That's not going to fly against the Warriors. It's not going to fly against the Rockets. You don't have to face either of those teams if you're going to the conference finals. You're going to face the Spurs or the Nuggets in the next round if you win. We've seen that Kanter can stay on the floor against the Thunder, where they're not really going to be able to put him on skates in the pick and roll because their spacing is so bizarre. And that's big for them. But then you look at Nurkic, who is a much better pick and roll defender than Enes Kanter. And it makes you sort of wonder, you know, what if they ended up facing the Rockets or the Warriors in the conference finals and they had him? That's not a series you pick them to beat, but just having a better defensive safety net in the middle there, maybe they make it a series. CJ McCollum, who I kind of slammed leading in to the playoffs and questioned after his injury, he's been playing magnificently for them. Damian Lillard, we know he's just fantastic. They've been getting just enough from the guys around them, where you look at Mo Harkless and Aminu hitting just enough threes for them, that they're a nice team to watch. And this is a series that where home court might end up just being huge based off what we've seen thus far. And so that's going to bode even well for the Blazers. But I do think you're right. This has probably been the second most exciting, engaging series to me anyway, the playoffs.
There are a lot of people in this area that, with the Bulls being what they are, have adopted the Milwaukee Bucks, at least for the year, because Giannis is Giannis and a lot of fun, and that team is damn good. So as they look forward to a, more likely than not, a series against the Celtics and then, you know, conference finals, are they the favorite for you to make the conference finals? And how seriously do you take that matchup with the Celtics?
I think they are a favorite to reach the conference finals. They've definitely earned it, and this is coming from someone who's remained stubborn in saying that the Raptors will come out of the East this year. I just think they're going to peak at the right time. That being said, there's a strong case for Milwaukee. Boston series is concerning because the Celtics, everyone's been talking about them kind of having this turnaround against the Pacers and finding their identity. They've played well in crunch time, but they've let a team that's clearly inferior hang around for long spurts of these games, and I don't fully trust them. However, Al Horford is one of those guys that can really needle Antetokounmpo on the defensive end. And so if they're able to really make life difficult for him, to where you don't have to send a ton of help, to where you're not going to let Antetokounmpo get to the rim as often, if you're really going to be able to coax him into taking more jumpers, which, while he's better, is still a weakness of his game, that could be one of those matchups that goes the full seven games. It's just watching the Celtics all year and seeing how inconsistent they can be. They need to be much better than they've been in this Indiana series thus far for me to think that they could push that series with the Bucks beyond six games.
And I find it fascinating just looking at Celtics tendencies of how, for what the Bucks do defensively, the Celtics kind of counter it pretty well. I just never feel like they're at the rim, which the Bucks really are saying, hey, we'll give you those threes, which the Celtics like take, and the long twos. But they just don't ever get to the rim, and that's what the Bucks are so good at frustrating teams at doing.
Yeah, and I wonder if we'll be able to see. The Bucks have been more disciplined defensively under Mike Budenholzer, but I wonder if they're going to be able just to take a few more chances against Boston, because that's not a team that, even when they're facing these weak defenses in the paint, that really gets to the rim anyway. There's, you know, Kyrie Irving, he's a great driver and a nifty finisher around the rim, but he's never just been this high-volume free-throw guy. We've seen Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. They still really need they still abandon their drives midway a lot and settle or get rid of the ball. And then Gordon Hayward's probably just been their best foul drawer of late, I would think, to me. So that's just something that the Bucks, maybe they're able to just be even more aggressive on the perimeter and try and go after more turnovers or just – maybe futz with their matchups a little bit in the half court because they're not worried about Boston getting to the rim.
As far as first rounds go, it's been a lot of fun. I cannot wait till we get to the second round. There's just going to be so much fun. And so, Dan, I'll probably be bothering you again. It's coming up. So I appreciate your time this morning and all the knowledge, and enjoy the games.
Most definitely. Thank you for having me, as always. Take care.
That's Dan Favalli. Follow him on Twitter at Dan Favalli. Can read him in Bleacher Report, NBA Math, and the Hardwood Knox podcast. A lot of good stuff there. And I understand there's a ton going on, and especially today with the holiday too. But if you get a chance to kind of throw on the TV in the background of your Easter festivities, or for those that are celebrating Passover, if it's you still have family in town and that kind of thing, then I'm acting like I kind of know. I really am fairly clueless on Passover. I'm not going to lie. I will claim ignorance on that one. But if you still got people in town and there's a way to kind of finagle that TV on the basketball, have it in the background, you know, have the Cubs game up on the radio, have the basketball in the background, that's the way to do it. That's the way to maximize your Sunday. But we're going to take a timeout and come back. And maybe
can I counter
on
the NBA for a second?
Go
not
for
that,
it.
Not, I know I'm a college basketball guy, so I'm not coming with that, though.
Not enough fundamentals?
I'm excited to see Kershaw against Yelich today.
That's also a great call. I cannot wait for that. It's a great sports day. It really is. There's a whole lot going on. I mean, I know there's, like, looking at the NBA slate today, you have a couple of your walkover series that could wrap up. If the Celtics win today, they wrap up their series. Golden State can take the 3-1 lead and kind of put the clamps down on the Clippers today. Toronto can take a commanding 3-1 lead, and that Portland, Oklahoma City game tonight. That's going to be the one that keeps me up late, and I'm going to get in tomorrow morning, and I wish I'd gone to bed a little earlier, but the basketball is going to be fantastic. So it's for me, it's my time of year. There's all that going on. We talked NFL draft with Greg Gabriel. We'll get back to some baseball as well, leading into Hit and Run. Matt Spiegel in 9 to 12:45. You're going to have Lynn Bramer from WXRT in studio at 10 o'clock. So that's going to be great to hear Lynn on these airwaves as well, because Lynn's a man that never sleeps. Lynn and Les are the two people that I think of off the top of my head that just never, ever sleep. I give them credit for it because, you know, get me to a little over 24 hours and I can't really function anymore. So I give them credit for being able to do what they do as well as they do it. So 312-644-6767. We talked a lot of Cubs in the first hour. Talked NFL draft and NBA so far this hour. Kind of just hodgepodge it to the end here. We got one more segment before Hit and Run starts. So give me a call. Leave a text, 670-11. I'm Rick Camp with you until 9 o'clock on The Score. The bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Nothing beats playoff hockey in Chicago. Catch your Central Division champion Chicago Wolves as they battle Grand Rapids in the first round of the Calder Cup playoffs. For up-to-date playoff information or tickets, visit ChicagoWolves.com. The Wolves actually tied up their series with Grand Rapids last night, getting a 3-2 win. So shouts to the Wolves for that. And I forgot to mention this before, but someone beat Dan Bernstein to a column. Second page of the Tribune, Paul Newberry, who writes for the AP, the Trib picked it up. 30 years after its release, Field of Dreams whiffs. And it's the gist of the column is Field of Dreams still kind of trash. Watch Bull Durham instead. Which, on the whole, that part, the watch Bull Durham instead of Field of Dreams, I'm down for. I am not going to say anything to anybody. But if there was a column to write, because it's the 30th anniversary of Field of Dreams. It was released April 21st, 1989. So, yeah, that just seems like a perfect Bernstein column that he was beaten to by Paul Newberry of the AP.
You hurt my eye.
Oh, sorry.
Well, did you hit me with your right hand? Or did you hit me with your left? Hon, did you hit me with your right hand? Or did you hit me with your left?
My left.
Good. Well, you get in a fight with a drunk, you don't hit him with your pitching hand.
It's perfect. You know, I didn't know until recently. I saw Bull Durham was on, so I caught it like about a half hour in.
It's on like every Sunday during the Sunday night game.
It really is. Well, and like the thing for me is for a long time here, I didn't have, for whatever reason, at the old place, we didn't get MLB Network. So it wasn't on near as often. So now having MLB Network again, I'm like, oh, I can watch Bull Durham. So pick it up about a half hour in. My wife sits down. She's like, oh, what's this? I'm like, what? What are you talking about? She's like, how old is this movie? So we had to have a real heart to heart at that point and be like, listen, we're going to sit here and we're going to watch the movie. We're going to watch Bull Durham. Because I don't know how long this marriage can last. I mean, that's one of those pillar movies, sports movies, to have to watch. Now, she's always in for a good movie, doesn't really give two about sports. So, but she ended up liking it. So that's good. So the marriage is stable now. I can report. The marriage is stable. But, yeah, so I found that funny, and when I read it, I was like, I feel like Dan's going to read this morning and be like, I should have written that. It should have been my Friday column. Something like that. But 312-644-6767, 670-11 on the text line. Talked a lot today in the first hour about the Cubs. Got a big and small picture and how they're working together in terms of Brandon Morrow being shut down, essentially. Can't expect really anything from him this season. Another up and down, really a true Yu Darvish start if there ever was one. You saw some of the flashes, some of those individual pitches. I think Pitching Ninja picked up one of his sliders that was just filthy in on a left-hander. Ah, but then you have the three early runs, and then the bullpen gives up more, and at that point, it's one of the days where the Cubs aren't hitting, and you end up having to go into a Sunday hoping to win a series that in a game that Tyler Chatwood is starting. So, obviously, not the best situation for the Cubs to be in on a Sunday when they're trying to, if nothing else, string series wins together. I understand Theo wants sweeps and all that, but if nothing else, getting your meatloaf, getting your 2 out of 3 ain't bad. Get that in against a Diamondbacks team that's okay. I don't think you can say anything more or too much less of the Diamondbacks at this point, but they're fine. They're a team you should be able to win a series against if the Cubs are going to be what they want to be.
Tyler Chatwood, when he's on, he's good.
Yeah, it's just, you know, not often. At least not often in a Cubs uniform. I wonder how many pitchers that doesn't qualify for. Even the worst pitcher in baseball, when he's on, when he's having one of his best days, is he still, like, average? Or is he, can he still be bad?
When Yu Darvish is on, is he good?
Oh, yeah, when Yu Darvish is on, he's good for 5 1/3. Like, I'm telling you, like, every time with quality of stuff and just what it ends up being, it just reminds me so much of Rich Harden when he was in a Cubs uniform. It really does. Like, at least when the Cubs acquired Rich Harden, you knew what he was. You knew that he was going to be 5-ish innings, 3 earned, 3 walks, 7 strikeouts, something along those lines, which really isn't that bad. Maybe I'm giving him too much credit, but that was the Rich Harden experience, and I know the Cubs need it to be much more than that for Yu Darvish, especially at this point, but I haven't seen it be that way. 302-644-67-67-670-11 on the text line, and I've even, on my phone, when I was going over the Field of Dreams article, I got some meme texts from people that are friends that are, you know, really anything baseball. They're in for the fun, in for the fun in baseball, in for nostalgia. So, yeah, they're definitely in for that. This segment's brought to you by International Champions Cup. Get ready for soccer's first tournament of the year. On July 16th, catch the International Champions Cup as AS Roma battles Chivas de Guadalajara right in their own backyard at SeatGeek Stadium. Get tickets at SeatGeek.com today. Just a reminder, Hit and Run coming up 9 to 12:45 today with the early Cubs pre. Matt Spiegel, obviously hosting every week as he does. Lynn Bramer is in at 10 from WXRT, the man that never sleeps. Cubs pre at 12:45 with Zach Zaidman. And then after the Cubs today, till 8 o'clock, Nick Schepkowski and Mark Grody. So plenty good on there. And then Parkins has his CBS Sports Radio show tonight as well, so you'll get that over the Score airwaves. I appreciate you being with me this morning. Happy Easter, Passover, whatever you're doing today. Enjoy it. Enjoy the weather. I think we're, knock on wood, finally getting there weather-wise. We're finally hitting that sweet spot before it gets too hot, and for fats like myself, it becomes problematic. So for now, it's good. I appreciate you listening to me this morning. I'll be back with you next week. A lot of draft talk next week, I'm sure. We'll be in the middle of the NFL draft. I'm Rick Camp, and this is The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.